From Allsport.com and Allsport Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Allsport National Podcast. Well, the British GT Championship has finally arrived. It feels like we've been waiting for the seasons to start for a few weeks, but it kicks off at Donington Park this weekend, April 5th and 6th. And I've got two special guests with me to talk about the season ahead. The first of those is our British GT correspondent, Ed Hardy. How are you doing, Ed? Welcome to the Allsport National Podcast.
All right, Kev. It's great to be here. Buzzing for the season ahead, but I know I'm not the guest everybody wants. It's the other man with me here.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be harsh, but I think, you know, four British GT titles, equal highest number of wins. Also, he's won that big race in France a couple of times in class as well, Le Mans 24 Hours. Welcome, Johnny Adam. How are you doing?
Good, yeah. Daddy Dick here on the build-up to British GT first round this weekend today. But yeah, all good. Looking forward to the season to get underway. And I think, weather-wise, this weekend, it looks glorious. So I think it should be a good weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listeners obviously won't know this, but you're actually currently feeding the latest addition to your team. So this is excellent multitasking. So this is what endurance drivers are used to doing. They're just multitasking all the time. So very impressed with that. Well, let's get into the season then. I'll start with you, Johnny. I guess last year, I mean, incredible record. You've won at least a race most seasons. You've done British GT, been in the title fight many times. But last year, perhaps, was that a building year with Blackthorn? Are you expecting maybe it to step up a notch this year with that new team?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I didn't know much beforehand with Blackthorn. They've been an Aston Martin racing customer for 3 years now. But last year was their first full campaign doing a championship. And they've chose, obviously, British GT last year to run two cars. So definitely the team massively stepped up as the season went on. I think we internally learned a lot about the car. I mean, it was an evolution, the Aston last year. So, I mean, the evolution had 65 different items on it. So quite a different car to drive, quite a different suspension layout. So setup was quite different. So it took us a good 3 or 4 rounds to learn the sweet spot of where the car needed to run. And personnel and the team needed obviously 2 or 3 weekends to really click and get working really behind the scenes well together. And it feels now, especially going into this year, it all feels connected. Last year, there was a few bits of the puzzle that were missing, it felt, throughout the year. And pace improved, and a lot of that was the championship understanding the new updated car and the team understanding the car as well. But this year feels really good. Same teammate with Giacomo Petrobello. Effectively, the same crew. We're only really running one car for most of the rounds, just our car. And we've done a bit of pre-season testing, which we never done last year. I mean, I only picked the phone up to Giacomo to race in March last year. And for example, this year, we've already raced in Asia Le Mans together in February. So it feels good. It feels like a championship can be won this year if we put it all together.
You mentioned Petrobelli. I mean, we've talked about this before. Yeah, getting the sort of the AM side up to speed is absolutely crucial in the, well, I was going to say British GT, but actually in lots of championships. Even in WEC, of course, with that's known as one of your strengths, isn't it? As to working with the AM. So how do you go about that? What have you done with Petrobelli to bring him on? Is it looking at pace? Is it consistency? Or does it depend on who you're working with as to what you need to focus on?
I think over the years that I've been with ProDrive and Aston Martin Racing, I mean, I've had probably 10 to 12 different customers, and most customers are different personalities. So you need to know what they want from the car, how they turn up at a weekend, what they need to really extract that pace from them. And they're all so different. You know, every age bracket is different that I've raced with in terms of bronzes. But that is the secret for success in any racing at the moment in sports cars and GT racing. Because a lot of these championships, and you touched on WEC as well, at the top end of the sports car ladder, is it's pro-am racing. You know, the bronze does the qualifying nowadays, the bronze does the lion's share of the stints. And I've always seen that within British GT, is my asset is trying to extract that speed from that customer. And Giacomo, he's raced a lot in the background, years gone by. You know, way back in 2010 and 11, he was racing in Blancpain with Kessel, and, you know, he was a very good silver back then, stopped racing altogether, and just came back into it in 2019, 2020. So I've raced on and off with him before, but last year was the first full season. He's a very good amp to race with because he understands the car, because he've his previous background, so we could do actually some setup work around his experience, and his feedback is honest and very detailed. Last year was difficult for him because a lot of these circuits he hadn't been to for a long time. So for example, Snetterton, he hadn't been there since from the Palmer Audi days. So for him, it was a big learning curve to have no testing in the budget as such, to turn up on a Friday morning having to relearn the circuit. But what we have done, we always use the sort of base performance simulator, and I've done that for years with customers. And the circuit model we've got there is within half a tenth to a tenth of what we're actually doing. And the car model now, we can replicate a bit of setup work already behind the scenes to what we're doing on the weekend. So it's a tool I swear by that it works for customers to have a head start before the weekend gets going, really. And the weekends, they're quite short. You know, yes, we do a little bit of testing on the Friday, but they're condensed into short sessions. So to have 2 or 3 hours spent, a bit of background knowledge makes a huge difference, even at British GT level. And that's what Giacomo was willing to do to win a championship.
I mean, we've seen, haven't we, increasing professionalism and tools and just all lots of things that you can do at all levels of the sport now. But I'm going to ask this question to both of you. I'm going to go to Ed first, so Johnny's got a bit more time to think about it. So come on, Ed. We've got, it's a pretty impressive entry list. The entry list of British GT over the last few years has had some fantastic names and fantastic teams in there. So looking at the entry list for 2025, apart from our special guest, who else are you expecting to see up at the front and fighting for the championship?
The obvious answer is Barwell. They're Chilean champions, dominated the year last year. They've got two very strong cars. They're the only team to actually win back-to-back teams' crowns over the past decade, so you can never rule them out. They've got Sandy Mitchell and Alex Martin in one car, Hugo Cook, and what was supposed to be Rob Collard, but now Matt Topham for the first round in the other. You know, Barwell always going to be good with the Lamborghinis, especially when you've got a driver like Sandy Mitchell, who Johnny knows very well, just how quick he is. You know, factory driver Lamborghini, just awesome last year. So definitely Barwell. But the one I can't help but be intrigued by is the two-seater Mercedes of Matsu Gertz and Kevin Say. It's finished seventh in the championship last year, but that was actually the car most capable of challenging the Barwell duo, because it's the only non-Barwell pairing that won multiple races, but they were just so inconsistent with a few non-scores. So I'm sort of intrigued by that entry. They've got the pace, it just depends if they've got the consistency, because it's got Matsu Gertz, a DTM champion, we all know what he can do. It's just whether Kevin can piece the inconsistency together to support Mats and launch a title challenge this year. But they both seemed confident at Silverstone. They've both worked on trying to improve from last year, so I'm quite intrigued by that 2C's entry.
And what do you think, Johnny? Who are you looking at in the timesheets when you come in? I mean, obviously I know you look at your own, but who are you looking out for this season?
Very similar. I mean, I think I've taught Sandy too much over the years. I did help, you know, when he was only doing GT4, I did help mentor and sort of manage him for a few years, and he's turned out to be very, very fast. You know, last year he was exceptionally fast in that car. And he's very good on the AM side as well. So I think him and Alex Martin definitely were fast last year. We're close to winning the championship for sure. They're going to be one of the favourites. And Mark Lemmer and Barwell always run a very clean, you know, very slick operation. 2Cs, I have raced with them, with James Cottingham in the Mercedes. I know how good a platform of a car that is and how good a team 2Cs are. And I think Kevin Say, and, you know, he's definitely one of the faster arms out there. He made a few mistakes last year, but if he does put that to the side, and obviously with Gotts as a factory Mercedes driver, they're going to be quick. But the other one I would kind of keep an eye on is Optimum are a very good team. Obviously, they're running four cars this year. And obviously, with Marvin and, you know, with Tilbrook driving on the AM side, they could be very strong as well. You know, Tilbrook's done the championship for a few years now. And to have a factory McLaren driver beside him this year could be pretty strong, you know. So Yeah, it's going to be tough. I think consistency ultimately wins the championship. Yes, winning races in British GT, there's big points on offer. There's 37.5 points for a 2 or 3 hour race. And ultimately, looking back from what I've done in the past, winning 2, if not 3 races really makes a huge difference to the total. But like anything else, you have to get off the mark really well. So Donington is going to be very important for a lot of people to start the season off well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just that was Morgan Tilbrook and Marvin Kirchhoffer, isn't it, in the McLaren there. But one thing I wanted to ask you, Ronnie, is I remember when you came into the championship in 2011 and the Aston Martin of choice in those days was the DBRS9, a fantastic bit of kit. But I mean, the cars and the championship have moved on quite a lot since then. So what are the sort of biggest changes that you've seen in those 15 years, basically?
I think the championship is massively moved on in terms of how professional it is. You know, the championship was, it still had numbers back in 2011, but it was it wasn't the level it is today. Today, you look down that paddock at the trucks, the garage boarding, the actual setup within the garages is very, very impressive. And it looks slick, you know, it looks like one of the top European Pro-Am championships out there. And, you know, Lauren and everyone at SRO put so much effort into making sure the customers are happy. They listen to the customers at every end of the season to see what they can improve on. Obviously, the worry at the moment is budgets are creeping up. You know, these GT3 platforms are becoming so advanced. You know, they're so fast compared to how we were in 2011. You know, I think it's seconds quicker nowadays on lap times, but purely down to aerodynamics and mechanical grip and tyre performance as well. But yeah, it's definitely stepped up. I mean, this year it's a little bit lower on certain numbers in terms of GT4, but GT3 quality is definitely there. Great teams running the operations and strong pros and bronze drivers in each class as well.
Well, Ed, we've also got a couple of interesting new cars coming in, haven't we? I mean, I know that the Ferrari isn't going to be at the first round. Matt Griffin was doing British GT when I was covering it many years ago, so he's really old, but it's still quick. So, I mean, we've got the Ferrari and the Honda coming in, haven't we? Which it adds to the variety quite nicely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Honda is quite an interesting one. They've not had a car in the championship since the 90s, so to see that come in was quite nice. I don't think it'll be up there towards the front. It's a Silver Ram pairing, and I spoke to its driver, Luke Garlick, who said it will be similar to sort of Johnny and Blackburn last year, just a case of building throughout the year and trying to improve. But it's a Ferrari that's grabbing the headlines, isn't it? Matt Griffin, Duncan Cameron, very experienced pairing. They've been there, done that. They know what to do. So it's a shame they're missing the first round, and I'm intrigued to see how that might affect their title ambitions, but yeah, we're all looking forward to seeing what that can do from Silverstone onwards, for definite.
Yeah, it's just nice, isn't it, for a British GT championship to have Aston Martin, Ferrari, Porsche represented. They're sort of the names you really want to see, aren't they?
But yeah, we can't forget Porsche, because that's coming back for the first time in 3 years full-time, and factory driver Sven Müller, he's won Porsche Super Cup in the past, so He's definitely one to watch for this year.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always the pro sessions, always the ones I like to. I take Johnny's point completely that the races and the championships are usually decided by the AMs, but it's the pro qualifying sessions and early parts of the races I really like to tune into, because it's sometimes so nip and tuck between so many good drivers. I think that's the sort of quality you really want to see in any championship. One last thing I wanted to ask you, Johnny, before I let you go back to full on daddy daycare, was you got a new Pirelli tyre this year. I mean, making these cars work with the tyres is always one of the key points, and that's obviously really difficult as well, isn't it, when you've got mid-engine cars, rear-engine cars, front-engine cars. So how are you finding the new tyre? Is it significantly different, or is it within a range of what you're familiar with? How much of a problem or an opportunity is that posed?
We've not done a lot. I mean, we've done the media day as a day of just learning the tyre. I mean, done some good tyre sweeps in terms of tyre temperatures, pressures and stuff like that. It's quite a different tyre in terms of how you would run the tyre on the pressure. But it seems like it's quite a consistent tyre. So I think in qualifying, there might be an opportunity to have another go, as in it's not all about the one lap peak of the tyre, which I think is a good thing for the AM, because ultimately the AM improves through confidence on the slick, especially in qualifying. We've not ran on new wet tyre. I've heard a lot of good stories about the new wet tyre. I think it's a lot faster. I think it's arguably nearly 2 seconds quicker. The tread pattern is quite different. It's very different compared to the previous Pirelli wet tyre. So I'm sure, I mean, we ran the wet tyre quite often last year in British GT with the weather we had. And I'm sure we'll get on that quite quickly. But I think it's dialing the tyre in to extract what you can from it in qualifying and then having quite a different car for the race. And we are literally going on two different mindsets. What we need for the race, because obviously you'll have full fuel and it's an hour stint. And then extracting that peak of the tyre, if you can, for qualifying and extracting that grip. So Pirelli always build a great tyre. Clearly, they've rolled out this new tyre globally to the SRO championships. And yeah, everyone's singing its praises. So I'm looking forward to getting on it as soon as possible.
Yeah, sounds good. Now, look, before we let you go, thank you very much for joining us. But one last thing, you're currently tied with Phil Keane on the most number of British GT wins with 19. So if you get your 20th win this year, could you promise us to come back and we'll have a bit of a chat about your British GT career and maybe pick out your best races or something like that? Are you up for that?
100%. I mean, we got a second last year. We came close to win, but this year, yeah, we ain't for the championship, but wins is on the cards for sure. And 100%, I'd love to come back, yeah.
Absolutely, great. Well, we'll pencil you in there with the expectation that you'll get that 20th on the board. Well, thank you very much, Johnny Adam. Really appreciate you joining us. Best of luck this season, and I'm sure we'll see you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot.
So, of course, British GT isn't just about GT3. That is the main class, of course. But we've also had a GT4 category that took a little while to get going. I remember when it came in, it was mainly Ginetta G50s, and it took a little while before it really got going. But it is now. We've got multi-mate contests. There's normally, as with GT3, there's some quick drivers at the front that are fighting it out. And we were just talking about Phil Keane there. He's actually in GT4 this year, so he's unlikely to be adding to his overall tally, which is why Johnny has got a good opportunity to move ahead. But apart from Phil Keane, who will be driving Team Parker Mercedes, Ed, who are you looking out for in the GT4 category?
I think the one that heads in is the favourite, and the one looking for history because no one's done back-to-back GT4 titles is Jack Brown at Optimum. He finally won the title last year at the season finale at Brands, and there seems to be a very confident, happy aura around him at Silverstone because he's got a new co-driver in the McLaren in Mark Warren, and he's actually took on a bit of a new role as like a leader of the team, sort of teaching Mark and trying to lead that team to another title, which is sort of a new thing for Jack because previously he sort of like relied on his co-driver, but Zach Meakin's gone, another co-driver, it's sort of on him now to lead the team, and I'm quite intrigued to see how Optimum fare and if they can get back-to-back titles because, yeah, the title rival from last year, Fossetti, no longer on the grid, so that's definitely the one to look out for.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the entry list now. There are some names, individuals that jump out. I mean, we've got Seb Morris, a former champion in a Parker Mercedes as well.
Yeah, Seb's not actually doing the full campaign. He's only doing the Endurance Cup, which is basically new for this year. It's a way of formalising the part-time entries. And it's being done at the bigger tracks, so Donington, Silverstone, Spa. And it's sort of like a championship within a championship for GT4 cars. And Seb's part of that. Basically just because him and his co-driver, Ed McDermott, couldn't do a full season, so they're contesting for the Endurance Cup, so Seb will be interesting to watch for sure.
I'm also Charlie Robertson is jumping out at me as well in the Century Motorsport BMW. He's usually quick in most things he jumps into as well. So yeah, it's definitely, I know it's a smaller field perhaps than you might have wanted with in GT4. It's just about getting into double figures, isn't it? But it still should be a close fight. Fight at the front. Anything else you wanted to I mean, not starting Alton Park, I suppose, that's a bit of a change. So I remember it usually kicks off. I wasn't very, very popular with my family when I covered British GT because it was always Easter weekend, Alton Park, and I'm off. I'm gone. Make your own arrangements, which obviously isn't the case this time because they're starting at Donington Park, which it's actually nice to make these little tweaks, isn't it, to the calendar occasionally.
Well, luckily for me, Alton Park's my local track, so I didn't have to leave my family last year. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's a move that's widely popular in the paddock because Oughton Park, first race of the year, just absolute carnage, especially for the rookies. I mean, there was very little running at the track last year. A lot of it was, I mean, you know what Oughton Park's like. It's very tight, twisty, not much runoff areas. So more often than not, you're going to get a safety car or two. And that's what happened last year. So that you couldn't really call it a race, to be honest with you. It was just spent behind safety car under yellow flag conditions. So that move is pretty popular. Go to Donington for the first race and then come to Walton when, in theory, the weather will be better. I don't think it will affect the title battle as much because they're still doing the same tracks, but it's just a nice move from the championship to shift the calendar a bit.
Yeah, it's quite good. I remember over a decade and a half ago discussions about TT3 cars being too quick for Oughton Park, but it is a great track. It is a good challenge, but perhaps moving it, as you say, later in the year when the amateur drivers are a bit more familiar with the cars and hopefully the weather is nicer. You never know. It's still May. It could go either way, but yeah. So yeah, just to outline it for everyone. So it's 6th of April at Donington Park and then go to Silverstone at the end of April. Big weekend, that one, because that's also a British touring car opener as well. So a lot's happening that weekend. Then it's Oughton Park on the 25th and 26th of May. Then the flyaway, as it were, not that any of them fly, of course, to Spa on the June the 22nd. Snetterton on the 12th, 13th of July. Brands Hatch on the 20th or 4th of August. And then finishing where they started at Donington Park on the 5th of October. We'll be sure to take a look at autosport.com for the British GT updates. Our man Ed will be on the ground and telling you all the important stuff that you need to know, and also look out for Autosport magazine. But thank you very much to Ed before we take a look at some of the support categories. So in true GT racing style, we're having a driver change. So Ed Hardy, he's out. He's been thrown out of the car by the pit crew and thrown into the car and doing his belts up to talk about the rest of the main support categories at Donington Park this weekend is Stephen Licorice. Welcome, Stephen. Welcome late to the party. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I don't know whether I'm an upgrade on Ed. I'm not sure who's the...
Who's the gold and who's the silver?
Yeah. I couldn't possibly comment.
No, we'll let the listeners decide over the next 20 minutes. Anyway, right, well, let's get to it. So it's not just British GT that's kicking off at Donington Park this weekend. We've also got GB4, the entry-level single-seater series, and, of course, Ginetta Junior, which I suppose is an entry-level GT category, effectively. But let's talk about single-seaters first, because we've talked about GTs already so far. So... Stephen, GB4, it's a tricky one, hasn't it? It's struggled a little bit to get going, I would argue. But they've got a change to the old GB3 car for this year, and it seems to be now heading in the right direction. Is that fair?
Absolutely, yeah. It's been, ever since GB4 was created, it's struggled to really find a niche in the marketplace. It's never really attracted huge grids. But this year it's been transformed with the addition of the new car. It's created a real buzz around the series. And whereas at times it's almost struggled to get into double figures in the past, there's supposed to be at least 24 cars taking part at Donington this weekend, potentially a few more. And that shows that clearly the switch to the old GB3 machine with the addition of the halo, which was quite a noticeable absence with the old car, particularly compared to most other sort of modern single seater series, it really seems to have struck a chord. It's brought a whole load of new teams into the championship, a whole load of new drivers, and it's transformed the fortunes, and it's shaping up to be a really, really interesting year.
Yeah, you have to say that that old GB3 car, I mean, did a pretty good service as GB3. If it then is somehow able to give GB4 a bit of new life, it'll have to start coming one of those sort of modern-day classic single-seaters. But I'm sure fans of old Formula 2 and Formula 3 will shoot me down in flames for that. But anyway, well, let's have a look at some of those drivers then. To pick them up. I mean, Callum Baxter is the highest-placed driver from 2024 to be coming back, although I guess that's less of an advantage this year because of the new car. So who are you looking at? Who's impressed in testing and what are the names that you're sort of picking out of the hat this time?
Yeah, and I think just a note on Baxter, first of all, the fact that he was seventh last year and there's not a huge number of drivers that are continuing from previous years. So it shows even more how well the new cars help to attract people in, because so many of them are new to the series. So speaking of those new to the series, one of the drivers that's been setting the pace in testing, and okay, it's testing, you can't really read too much into it, particularly when it is a new car to the series, at least, even if it's an existing car elsewhere. But one of the drivers that's been really looking impressive has been Luke Hilton. And he's the latest driver that's made the switch from Fiesta Juniors into single-seaters. We've had a few that have done pretty well on that path in the past, with Joseph Loke and Deegan Fairclough. Hilton was runner-up in Fiesta Junior in 2023. He raced Radicals last year and now is in GB4, so a really unconventional route into modern junior single-seaters. But he's been looking really quick with Douglas Motorsport, so he's certainly going to be one to watch. But also one to watch, and this is another intriguing name, is going to be Daniel Ginchard, who used to be a Mercedes junior driver, had a very successful karting career, moved into British F4 in 2022, but never really worked out for him. And he did a part season in 2023 before the budget ran out. Got some good results along the way, but never really delivered on his potential. And he was back karting in Germany last year. He first started competing in Germany in 2020, returned there last year, but got called up by the Hillspeed squad. They had a driver available in GB4, was able to put a deal together, and now 18 months after he last raced a car, he's back into cars. And he was also very quick in testing, considering it was the first time he'd driven a car in 18 months. He was instantly on the pace and was very, very quick indeed. So I think he's going to be one to really watch, particularly as he's got a bit more experience, even if not as recently, but he's got a bit more single-seater experience than some of the other drivers on the grid. So I think he's certainly an intriguing one. Another one that's got previous British F4 experience is Alex Berg. He's going to be with Graham Brunton Racing. And then the Elite Motorsport drivers are also looking pretty quick. Isaac Phelps was one of the Ginetta Junior front runners last year. And then you've got a karting graduate, Alex Koutoulas. And they've been looking pretty quick in testing, as has Leon Wilson, who was one of the other drivers, one of the few drivers continuing from last year. He's staying with Arden after finishing 10th in last year's standings. So those are just a few of the drivers that have impressed. But I think because there is so much new with the new car, so many new faces, new teams, it's really, really difficult to call exactly who will be at the front. So I think it's got all the ingredients to be a really, really interesting season.
Yeah, that does sound promising, doesn't it? And for those that like, I don't know, famous surnames or a headline or sons of, we've also got Dayton Coulthard and Luca Magnussen, haven't we? Stepping into single seaters. So obviously Dayton, or DC, we can call him DC.
Yes.
DC Junior is with Douglas Motorsport, and Luca Magnussen. Luca Magnussen, that does sound like quite a quick name, that, doesn't it? Is at Fortec. So yeah, how have they been getting? I mean, obviously they're going to get, I guess, a bit more attention than some of the others, just purely by, you know, who their dads are. But how are things shaping up for them?
Yes, so they are, as you say, fresh into cars for this year, so they naturally will be a little bit further down the pecking order than some of the others that have got either just junior or other single seater experience. But I think it will be a really interesting subplot to the season, following which of the 1990 McLaren driver's sons will emerge on top. And as the year progresses, the competitive order could change quite significantly as people like Coulthard Magnussen get up to speed. So that's just another little interesting element that would be fascinating to follow during the course of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at the calendar, it kind of roughly follows the British GT calendar we talked about earlier. So it's Donington this weekend, Silverstone at the end of April, Alton Park 25th, 26th of May, Snetterton on 12th, 13th of July, Silverstone on the 2nd and 3rd of August, Brands Hatch at the end of August, and then the season finale at Donington Park on the 4th and 5th of October. So that's the sort of single-seater support to British GT this weekend. Obviously, GB3 will also be part of that package most of the time, but actually isn't starting until Silverstone at the end of the month, so we'll have a separate preview of that a bit nearer the time. But the other championship that's kicking off this weekend is Ginetta Junior. Now, when it parted company from the Toka package at the end of 2022, I think there were a lot of questions asked about whether that was a good idea, because Ginetta Junior is always one of the highlights of the British Touring Car weekend, I think, for a lot of people. And there was like, oh, is this moving away from that TV package? It's a good package. Was it a good idea? And then in 2023, they had Freddie Slater come through. Well, he's definitely going places in motorsport, so that's a good name that they can say. Ah, he was a junior graduate after we left Toka. And then last year, there was some pretty good racing, decent grids. And so I think, Stephen, can we say now that it actually has shown that it's able to stay strong and survive outside of Toka?
Yeah, very much so. It, like you say, it did sort of dip a little bit in that first year after leaving the Toka package, but it's since really stabilised. And this year is looking actually stronger than ever. It's its 20th season this year, incredibly, for Ginetta Junior.
Amazing.
500th race later in the year. And it's actually got a record entry in terms of a first round entry of 28 drivers, which is a huge number. So that's going to be spectacular to watch, I think, this weekend. Certainly make sure you pay attention to those races. Seeing 28 of the teenagers all battling frenetically is likely to be quite a sight. But it's for this year, it's like GB4. It's not got a completely new car, but it is a refreshed car. It's an Evo version of the G40, particularly with some new bodywork and bits and pieces. And it's also got an overseas round at Zandvoort this year as well. And it just really seems like a championship that is going places. It's no longer on the Toka package, but it's still generating plenty of interest. And it's still fulfilling that important role of being an introductory step into cars for drivers coming out of karting that perhaps are too young to race in single seaters, or who want a bit of experience before going into single seaters.
Yeah, and to sort of underline that point, you've got two Red Bull juniors on the ground. Okay, I know the Red Bull driver program has had a lot of focus on it in recent weeks, given what's been happening with its F1 squad. But if you look at bigger picture stuff, yeah, the junior program has put through a lot of good drivers that have gone on to professional careers, even if they haven't made it in Formula One. So, who are the two that are joining the Ginetta Junior grid, and what can we expect from them, do you think?
Well, this is interesting because we never, in all the years of the Red Bull program, they've never appeared in Ginetta Junior before. So it's a clear vote of confidence in the series that it's appearing on the radar of one of the top F1 teams. So the two Red Bull juniors on the grid in the Red Bull colours on the G40s will be Rocco Coronel, who's the son of Tom Coronel, so a familiar name to motor racing enthusiasts from having starred in various Tin Top series over many, many years. And the other one is Scott Kin Lindblom. So two drivers that will have an incredible amount of pressure on them this year, considering that all the talk will be about the fact that they've got Red Bull cars, Red Bull Junior, can they progress up the ladder? So they're in a pretty tough position, I think it's probably fair to say, because if they don't perform, then they're going to be in trouble, because there's not going to be anywhere to hide. But equally, if they do particularly well and win races, win the championship, then it's almost what's expected of them in some ways. So I think it's going to be quite a tough task for them this year. And as we mentioned before, there's 28 drivers on the grid, so it's not going to be easy to win races, and achieving consistent results across the season is going to be absolutely key. And when there's 28 drivers on the grid, that's not going to be easy at all. So it'll be really interesting to see how the two Red Bull cars get on. They're with R Racing, which is one of the established top teams in Ginetta Junior. So they're in the right place to perform. And they made their debuts at in the winter series at Silverstone at the end of last year, which was very much a learning experience. They weren't particularly near the front, but then they were up against drivers that had done a full season beforehand. They hadn't done a huge amount of preparation ahead of that event. So it's still very early days for them, but they'll definitely be ones to watch this year.
Yeah, if we know nothing else about the Red Bull Junior program, is that they like to put their drivers under pressure. So have a really brightly liveried Red Bull, couple of Ginettas in there, and you can spot how well or otherwise they're doing. So we do wish Rocco and Scott all the best this season. Well, before Stephen goes off to look through the nearly 500 races so that he can prepare a top 10 Ginetta Junior races and a top 10 Ginetta Junior drivers of the last 20 years, any other drives that you want to pick out that could be ones to watch? And we've got a nice mix of nationalities and different drivers in there, haven't we? I mean, I suppose you would do with a grid that big. So who else should we be looking out for?
No, that's a really good point, because not only is the grid very big this year, that the number of nationalities is incredible. It's something that's not happened with Ginetta Junior before. There's 10 different nationalities represented from 5 different continents, so it's really suddenly tapped into a bit of global appeal there, which is interesting. In terms of other drivers to watch, I think one has to be Lindblom and Coronel's teammate, one of their teammates at R-Racing, Alfie Slater, who's the younger brother of Freddie Slater, who we mentioned before dominated in 2023. Alfie Slater is the highest placed driver continuing from last year. He finished 9th in the championship last year. So he's definitely going to be one to watch. And then moving across to Elite Motorsport, one of the other established squads this year is Colin Cronin, part of the Cronin Motorsport dynasty that has achieved success in rallying and other disciplines. So he was a race winner last year with Fox Motorsport, so he's likely to be a front runner this time around. And then perhaps one of the other intriguing entries is with a new team, Tim Gray Motorsport. Obviously, Tim got a huge amount of club motorsport experience. One of their drivers is Josh Henry, who won the Irish Junior Mini Championship over at Mondello Park last year. So he's now progressing to a different junior category, Ginetta Junior. So he could be one to watch as well, and obviously knows what it takes to win. So that could be an interesting one to follow. But ultimately, when there's 28 drivers on the grid, so many of them are new to the series this year, it's another one where it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out over the course of the season.
Well, that's what you want, isn't it? You want to sort of be able to look at the entry list and not entirely be able to pick out the championship finishing order at the end of the season. Now, that would be a bit disappointing. So, it's a very impressive field, you have to say, from Ginetta Junior. So, well done to Ginetta. I mean, that championship, I think it's got to be one of the most successful national categories this century, hasn't it? And I'm sure that we'll be doing more national coverage on Ginetta Junior, both on the podcast and elsewhere during the course of the season. Yeah, I'm going to send Stephen off to kind of go and produce some lists, because regular listeners will know how much I like a good list. Well, is there anything else you wanted to highlight, Stephen, before we actually head off? You won't be heading off to Donington, I take it. We'll be letting Ed no, control that one, will we?
That'll be down to Ed. But there are other series also beginning this weekend at Donington. There's the latest Ginetta GT Academy, which is like an entry level point into sports cars for aspiring drivers. And there's also the Ginetta GT Championship, which has got a new car for this year. It's a new GTP8 Ginetta, which is a V8 powered version of effectively of the G56. And then also in action at Donington is TCR UK, because there's no GP3 there. There's one space on the support bill. So it would be the second round of TCR UK. They also had the opener at Donington Park. So it's a chance for any drivers that failed to capitalize on that round. They've got another chance to this time around. And it was Adam Shepherd that set the pace in the opener. So it'll be interesting to see who can merge on top of that as well. So there's a bit of tin top action as well as the GTs and single seaters.
Yeah, it's quite a nice little package, that, isn't it? quite good. Adam's another graduate from club racing, of course, that won a few club level championships. So yeah, nice to see him get stepping up and doing well in TCR UK. Well, thank you very much to Stephen Licorice for that. Thank you again to Johnny Adam for joining us earlier, and to Ed Hardy, our British GT correspondent. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this one, and will enjoy the action from Donington Park or anywhere else in the UK you happen to be heading this weekend, and we'll be back soon with another All Sport podcast.